Rajon Rondo is a competitor, and I think it takes a unique personality to coach him. You know, he's shown that he can play in big moments. So it wasn't like he hasn't been there, done that. I was very happy for him to see how he emerged this year as a leader.
Rick Bucher. Rajon Rondo stood up for the young guys on that team. Rondo's impact on that team was so profound that now we're hearing that some of the players, particularly the young players, want to see Rondo back on that team next year.
This is the BJ Armstrong and Rick Bucher Show, starring BJ and Bucher.
Welcome to the 38th episode of the BJ and Bucher podcast, Four Quarters of Madness. Very excited about this podcast. Our guest for the fourth quarter is none other than Kyle Korver, known as Threesis in Atlanta. Sniper when he first came into the league with Philly. We talked about his nicknames. We talked about playing with three great players in his career like Allen Iverson, LeBron James, and Derrick Rose. Talked to him about making the shift from Atlanta to Cleveland in midseason, and talked about his wife who once upon a time was going to be the next Katy Perry until she decided to have babies with Kyle. So we're going to get into all that and more. But
it sounded like it's a bad thing.
I'm going to welcome in BJ, otherwise known as Mr. Oh Wow, for being surprised by that little bit of news.
I caught you
unexpectedly there, didn't I?
Yeah. Yes, you did.
It was kind of okey-doked you a little bit. Yeah.
Almost too much information. Yeah. But okay. Yeah. All right then. Thanks.
Almost
too much information.
Right. All right. So let's get into the first quarter. BJ, we were both just at the draft combine. We did not see each other. We were both there. It really doesn't surprise me because the draft combine has become like summer league, like all-star weekend. It's become an event unto itself. And I feel as if there's as many people there to be seen as they are to actually see the players and the talent that might be there. But I wondered from an agent's perspective, what was it that you were trying to accomplish while you were there?
Well, the first thing, you know, is accomplishing is the lines of communication and between the agents and the executives. This is going to be possibly the last time that you'll actually be able to sit down in a face-to-face type scenario and really just try to get a feel, you know, how are you guys going to conduct your workouts in your respective cities? What are you looking for in free agency? Is there a need that we can possibly address in the draft? So this gives you an opportunity to get a feel for, you know, sometimes there's changes, you know, in the way they're going to do business or conduct business, I should say. So you're just really trying to get a feel. You're really outlining, you know, how you're going to communicate with the teams before the actual draft, the process begins there after the lottery selection.
Now, whether it's a combination of free agents or draft guys that you have in the draft that you're representing, are you targeting specific teams or executives at this point that you want to explore? And or is it just you're going to talk to everybody and anybody that you can? Like how much are you pointed in a particular direction?
Well, I like to get a feel from all of the teams because within the teams, there's, you know, you begin to pick up trends. You begin to pick up, you know, what teams are looking for, how they're going to utilize the salary cap. You know, you really begin to talk out the rules and how people are actually thinking from year to year. And every year you want to be able to hear how teams are evaluating talent. You know, there's a trend happening in our league now where there's a premium on shooting. There's a premium on having, having positionless players that can defend multiple positions. So, you know, it's as I sit there and I talk to teams and I talk to executives, you begin to pick up on what are they actually looking for? Because this three-point shooting here is for real. And teams are really taking advantage of how they play, how they coach, and what they're looking for. So, you know, Kyle Korver is a prime example where, you know, there's other parts of his games, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, he may have been evaluated differently. He's such an accomplished three-point shooter that now the premium that he has on the floor really affects the bottom line of the game because everyone's trying to create space. So you hear these two terms you know, there's space. Everyone's looking for the three-point shooting, and then they want to play at a pace. So they want to get up and down and play much faster. So, you know, this space and pace is a real thing that teams and executives and coaches are really trying to encourage their players to play at a different way than in, say, you know, 10 years ago.
So I don't know how many days you were in Chicago.
I was there all week, actually.
So I was just wondering, like, how you fit in. I mean, did you literally meet with people from all 30 teams?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I do it every year.
Wow.
Every year. And like I say, you want to, you know, how are they evaluating the players? You know, how am I going to do my job if I don't speak and talk to the teams and what they're actually looking for? So as the league begins to evolve and change, it's my job as an agent, it's my job on behalf of my clients that I currently represent, to be in front of the wave and say, you know what, you know, there was a time where power forwards did all the dirty work. Now you're looking for power forwards who can actually stretch the floor and shoot threes. So it's just, you know, you got to know, and you have to understand, you know, what they're looking for so that you can properly evaluate what you're doing as well. If you want to be successful, you got to get the information and be able to make the proper, you know, assessment yourself to help your clients.
So I've always wondered, when you have more than one client in the draft, or you have like a top free agent, and like, how do you prioritize the work that you're going to do? Is it literally, if a guy's a lottery pick, he's probably getting a little more attention than the next guy? Or, and do guys know that? How do you go about dividing your time among your clients?
Well, the more clients I have, the easier the draft process is. And the reason being is because you have access to more information. If I have multiple players in the draft, that means teams have to come to me. They can't call and play their agent off of my client. You know, they can't say, well,
another agent?
Yeah, another agent, yes. If I have, you know, I think the most players I've ever had in one draft was like 6 players. It was the easiest process ever because I knew what the teams were going to do, because if I had 6 players who were going to be in the top 12 of the draft, I could lock out a team if he suddenly tells me that he's not going to play player X that I actually represent. So it's better I probably shouldn't say this, but it's better to have, you know, more clients than less, because you actually have more information and the teams have to give you all of the information. If I have 3 out of the top 5 picks, then suddenly I can control the draft process.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But if we have 5 different agents, now you're bluffing, you know, you're playing poker, and sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. So the more information I can have, the better of an agent I am. And I think that you can say that about all agents.
All right. Before we get out of the first quarter, I want to hit very quickly on the fact that Kyle Lowry has announced that he's going to exercise his option. He's going to be on the free agent market. I actually had a chance to talk to a number of GMs and executives because I was curious about what the view is with Lowry on the market, George Hill potentially on the market, Chris Paul on the market, Derrick Rose on the market. And I had a number of executives who put, they look at age and everything else and put the highest value on Kyle Lowry as far as the free agents are available. Some question marks, some concerns, but thought that certainly there was going to be a big market for him. And because of age with Chris Paul, some were willing to say, I might roll the dice with Kyle ahead of Chris Paul because he would be, what, 38 years old, approaching 38 years old when that contract ends.
Right.
When you look at Lowry and you look at the landscape, first of all, just his talk about, or at least the rumor that he would want to go out west, what does it say to you, not as an agent, but as a player? As a player, this has shades of Paul George to me. I hate to say it. We didn't look kindly on Paul George wanting to go to the Lakers. Thought that might have pushed Larry Bird into stepping down in his position. Do you look any different at Kyle Lowry saying, I want to look at my options, not wed to Toronto, and I may want to go out west, not knowing exactly what going out west means?
Well, now that I've had an opportunity to speak with, you know, the teams itself, I have a pretty good frame and a pretty good idea of what matters most in this league. And whenever I hear players talking about going out west or doing things, and I didn't hear the full interview, you know, I tend to I tend to just block that out. It's just background noise.
Yeah.
The only thing that matters in this league is winning. That's it. And when I don't hear a player talk about winning, I get very concerned, because every team in this league that wins, it's the same interview and it's the same conversation. It's about making sure that we have professionals and that we protect our environment. And I'm here to tell our listeners that I can't say that about all 30 teams. I hear so many different things. Well, we put a premium on shooting. We put a premium on, you know, skill players. We put a premium, we want our bigs. And I listen, but I can assure you that the teams that play late in the playoffs, they have the same needs.
So out of the 30, how many teams would you say talk winning? How many would you say you get the no questions in my mind, they are about winning first?
Well, I think they're, you know, I call it unrealistic, you know, talking about it winning and your team is not ready to win. You're not drafting 19-year-olds and 20-year-olds in a lottery and then telling me that you're realistically, you think you're going to advance to the second in the conference finals. Hmm. Now, you know, to be very specific, you know, every team, you know, you have to grow your team to get ready to get to this position. This league is very, very difficult, and I think we underestimate that. I think every team has aspirations to win. I think every player wants to go out there and win and play well. But how many understand it? You know, when I look at the teams, the leadership, and when I mean the leadership, the people that are making the decisions, they all say the same thing to me when we sit down and talk. We don't want basketball players. We want professionals. There's a difference between players and professionals. You don't win with players in this league.
Yeah.
You win with professionals. I heard that when I played, when I was an executive, I heard that, and I hear it as an agent. Hmm. Now, when I recruit, I try to determine how long before this player is going to become a professional. I don't want players. I want professionals, because professionals are the people who succeed at this level. And every team that's winning and trying to win are trying to get as many professionals as they possibly can, because that gives you the best opportunity to win basketball games at this level.
Okay, let's go to the second quarter. And talking about being professional, we already have a professional marketer, LeVar Ball, doing that on behalf of his son, Lonzo Ball. There's so many layers to this. I believe you and I have talked about this at various times, whether it's on the radio or here on the podcast. But the latest turn for me is that the explanation of the shoe being $495, and the reason is because and that's twice as much, and maybe, well, I don't know, 10 times as much, almost 10 times as much, certainly 8 times as much as what Michael Jordan's first shoe was. And LeVar's explanation was, well, Jordan couldn't do what Lonzo Ball could do. This is the Ball era. And that, to me, is a no-win strategy, because all that the media and the public hear is LeVar Ball saying that Lonzo is better than Michael Jordan. And the chances of him being that are so slim that the second he shows any indication he's not, then the weight of the world, I mean, the weight of the world is already on him. But when you look at what LeVar is doing with Lonzo and with this latest episode, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
Well, as a player, you know, I love to talk trash just as much as the next. And I grew up that way. I grew up in that environment. So I find it quite humorous, to be honest with you. As a professional that played in that league, everything I need to know is going to happen at 7:30 at an NBA arena near you. It doesn't matter what's going on off the court. It doesn't really matter. You know, all of this, it's just like we have a lot of downtime right now and we're talking about it. I think mission is accomplished because we're talking about it. So give him credit, LeVar credit. Now, let's get down to what this is really all about. Mm-hmm. We're going to find out in between those lines what's really going on. The players know. That's why I love talking to the players. And not only they're going to talk about it, they're going to actually have an opportunity to do something about it. So I'm excited to see the response of everyone, how they respond once that game starts, because that's where it's going to happen. It doesn't really matter. Now, he's done a LeVar has done an excellent job of gaining attention. He has people talking. Okay, that's what marketing and PR is all about. Now, whether or not it's going to really happen, those players in them uniforms are going to determine that. And that's the one I'm going to be watching closely, because any competitor is going to love this opportunity to find out.
I will always stand behind somebody who's trying to do something on their own or blaze a new path. I admire that. There's two different things. There's creating a business, but then there is, he's creating an awful amount of static and noise that Lonzo's going to have to deal with. You're talking about on the floor. And I certainly can appreciate that. I don't know that any of that changes. I don't know that any of that changes by anything that LeVar is doing or whether he has his own shoe or any of that stuff. I think players are going to come after him and are going to challenge him because they want to find out whether he can play. That would happen regardless of who his dad was.
Right. But, that's going
to
happen.
But then there's this whole other thing that Lonzo has to deal with every day when the media is there asking about his dad, asking about the or writing or talking about the comparisons. He's going to be on First Take and the you know, if he's not living up to that billing. And that's creating a weight and an expectation that I see as being a negative, as being not helping Lonzo in any way.
Everyone doesn't like them bright lights, and everyone can't hold that spotlight. But let's find out. There aren't many players that can hold that spotlight.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of people who claim to be this and claim to be that. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone says they want the ball in the last 4 minutes.
Right.
But Rick,
yeah.
We know the players who really want the ball in the last 4 minutes.
Amen.
Okay. Now, that's why I love it, is because we're going to find out.
Right.
Look, this league, we're going to find out really what's going on at 7:30, because that's when them players come out.
Yeah,
that's
we're
when
gonna
them,
find
hey,
out.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, that's when we're gonna find out who really want that ball in the last 4 minutes. You know, that's the key.
Yeah.
So this is great. It's piquing your interest. Let's be honest.
That's true. That's
everyone's
true.
Gonna take.
That's
everyone's
true.
Gonna take a look.
Right.
Maybe you may not look long,
right.
But you're gonna take a look. You're gonna take a look, because guess what? And guess what? Those players are gonna do. They gonna be ready too. They see this.
Yep.
Hey,
buddy.
Trust me on this.
Yeah, buddy.
Trust me on this. You know, I represent a few players in this league. They love this. You love this.
Okay.
I mean, Rick,
okay.
This is what.
Yeah.
Oh, this. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see you.
Yeah.
I see you. Now, to me, that brings out the best in everyone. So the fact that everyone's awareness is raised, to me, is great for the league.
Yeah.
It's great for the league.
You know what? It's great for everybody, except maybe Lonzo Ball. He's the only one this may not be
it
great
may not
for.
Be good for him.
All right. That's the end of the second quarter. Now up Shane, our producer, with the halftime entertainment. Shane, take it away.
What are you doing? It's just a halftime.
Yes, this is my favorite part of the game.
All right, guys, the halftime break on the BJ and Bucher podcast. And today's halftime entertainment is brought to you by Notorious B.I.G. Rest in peace. And this is his hit record, Hypnotize. Enjoy.
I'm sicker than your average. I'm a twist cabbage on instinct. Don't think, stink, pink gators. My Detroit players. Tim's for my hooligans in Brooklyn.
That's
dead right. If the head right, Biggie there, and I. Papa been smooth since days of under rules. Never lose, never choose to. Bruce Cruz who? Do something to us. Talk goes through us. Girls want to us, wanna do us. Screw us, who us? Yeah, Papa and Pop. Close like Starsky and Hutch. Stick to clutch. Yeah, I squeeze three at your cherry M3. Bang every MC easily.
Take that.
Recently. Frontin' ain't saying nothing, so I just speak my peace.
Come
keep my peace. Cubans with the Jesus peace. With
you,
my peace. Packing, asking who want it. They got it, flaunt it. That Brooklyn, we on it.
Biggie, 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 can't you see? Sometimes your words just hypnotize me. And I just love your flashy ways. Guess that's why they're broken, you're so mean. Biggie, 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 can't you see? Sometimes your words just hypnotize me. And I just love your flashy ways. Guess that's why they're broken, you're so mean.
I put the NY onto DKNY. Miami, D.C., prefer Versace.
That's right.
All Philly... No, it's Moschino. Every cutie with the booty for the coochie. Now, who's the real dookie? Meaning, who's really the shit? Rod.
Frank Wright pushed six on the Lexus LX, 4.5. Bulletproof glass tips if I want some. Gon' blast sweet first, ask questions last. That's how most of these so-called gangsters pass. At last, a rapping about some bras, menage a trois. Some expensive cars that still leave you on the pavement. Condo paid for, no car payment. My arraignment, no for the cleaning. Your daughter's tied up in the Brooklyn basement. Face it, not guilty, that's how I stay still. Richer than rich, so you come and get
come on. Biggie, 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 can't you see? Sometimes your words just hypnotize me. And I just love your flashy ways. This is why they're broken, you're so
can't you see? Hope you enjoyed that halftime entertainment. It's now time for the third quarter. And yes, that means it's time once again for the NBA Trivia Challenge. BJ, I come to you first. I hold the NBA playoff record for the most points in a three-game series. Who am I? Bill Russell, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
Read that to me again. Not the question, just the player.
The four names?
Yeah, the four
names. Four names are Bill Russell, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
I'm just going to say Kareem.
And that would be incorrect. It would be your former teammate, Michael Jordan. He scored 135 points in the 1992 series versus Miami. That came out to a 45 points per game average. I didn't even know they were still playing best of three.
I didn't either. I played in that series and I didn't even.
Right. I was actually shocked when I saw the stat.
That was like, a three. Are you? No, that can't be right. I don't think I've ever played in a three-game series. That can't be right.
It was on NBA.
No, that can't be right. I never played in a three-game series.
Maybe you guys swept.
Yeah, I never played in a three-game series.
It was like a five-game series or something?
It was a five-game series.
Five-game series, but you guys won in three. Maybe that was
Exactly. I never played. Exactly. That can't be right. Okay, well, let's go on.
Yeah.
That's one for Rick, one for BJ.
Oh, we both get a point for that.
We both get a point for that. I never played in a three-game series.
Hey, and you know what gets a negative two? That would be Shane, our producer.
Exactly.
Yes, minus two. Yeah, okay.
I hold the NBA playoff single series record for the highest points per game average. Who am I? Michael Jordan, Stephen Curry, Jerry West, Wilt the Stilt Chamberlain.
Highest average for a three-game playoff series?
Oh, gosh. No.
Single series.
A single series. Yep.
Wow. I'm going to say Wilt.
That is incorrect. Mm. It is Jerry West. As a member of the 1965 LA Lakers, he averaged 46.3 points a game versus the Baltimore Bullets.
He got after it.
Yeah, that's
All right.
This is five-game series, just so we know. Okay, it says three, but this is five-game series.
Yeah, okay. So we got one. It's 1-1 right now. It's 1-1.
Yeah, right. This guy has the record for the most free throws made in a five-game series. Larry Bird, Kevin Johnson, Kevin Durant, or Michael Jordan?
The most free throws made in a five-game...
In a five-game series, correct.
Michael Jordan, Kevin Durant. No, it can't be Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant can't be old enough to play in a five-game series. Who's the other one? But maybe that is.
Kevin Johnson and Larry Bird.
Oh, wow. I'm going to say Kevin Johnson.
Ding, 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 ding. That is correct. Yeah. That is playing. You know what you did? You played Shane, the producer. That's what you did. You looked at that and went, that's a name that I normally wouldn't believe should
be. Well, I can't believe I would have two Michael Jordans.
There's a reason. That's a good point.
And then
that's
was like, Larry Bird was a physical player, but he wasn't in a five game series.
He wouldn't have shot a ton of free throws. That's a good call. As a member of the 1989 Phoenix Suns, Kevin Johnson sank 43 shots from the charity stripe against the Denver.
All right, here we go.
Okay.
This guy is one of two people who hold the NBA record for the most steals in a three game series.
Five.
Is that accurate? It's a five-game series. Throwing me completely off, but okay.
John Stockton.
Five. Yeah.
Muggsy Bogues.
Yeah.
Clyde Drexler.
Yeah.
Mark Jackson.
Oh, interesting.
Well, I'm just going to say this. I don't know how much defense our good friend Mark Jackson was playing, so I'm just going to give you that one.
Yeah. 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 Thank you. I certainly wasn't going to go there. I was not going to go there.
We love Mark. I mean, we love the shimmy, but, you know, I don't know how much in the passing lane he really was.
Man, that's tough because John always had the freedom to roam. So he had the opportunity to steal a lot. But, and Muggsy, you know, if I go by the strategy that I just talked about with Kevin Johnson, then I have to go Muggsy Bogues, even though I want to go Clyde Drexler. I'm going to go with my strategy. I'm going to say Muggsy Bogues.
That is incorrect. You were right with Clyde Drexler.
Damn it!
You were right.
Trying to get into Shane's head. Didn't work.
Go with your guns.
You know, Clyde was, you know, Clyde
loved to jump those passing lanes, man. He was always hawking, right?
Yeah, he was always hawking. Muggsy was a very difficult to play against in the regular season, but in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And that's what,
that's a really
Clyde
good point.
Was constantly playing in the past. You know, he was always.
Yep.
But
yep.
I still get nightmares playing against Muggsy. I can still see
those little guys getting up underneath you.
You get a rebound, and you were afraid to put it on the floor because he was just standing right there.
standing right underneath
you. Yeah, he was.
You.
I mean,
yeah.
Oh, gosh. Put away all the basketball. Muggsy might be there when I look down.
All right. So, for the first time in a long time, BJ Armstrong claims victory.
I'm sorry. Hold up. What happened?
For the first time in a long time, that part? First time in a very long time, BJ Armstrong claims victory.
Oh, you're going to get it this
week. You know
week.
What? I had so many wins. This is like being up 3-0 in a series, and I'm like, you know what, little fella? I'm glad you
you're
got
only
one.
As good as I'm your good. Last game. You're only as good as your last game. You lost. You lost, okay? You're right now, you're on a one-game losing streak, okay?
You know what? I'll live with A. Hey, the game never ends. As you taught me. Game never ends.
Okay.
Let's run it back. So we'll wait until the next show to run it back. In the meantime, we're going to run out the interview with Kyle Korver. Please enjoy.
Welcome to the fourth quarter of the BJ and Bucher podcast. We're now joined by our special guest for today, swingman for the Cleveland Cavaliers, Kyle Korver. Kyle, thank you so much for taking the time. It's a little bit weird for me to formally introduce you like that because I'm just used to just saying, hey, what's up? Walking in the locker room or seeing you wherever. We've known each other for a little bit now, but I suppose I would say congratulations on the move, but I haven't really had a chance to talk to you at length since you went to Cleveland. And as we both know, you have a young family. You had put down roots in Atlanta, I think, as far as being part of that franchise. So is it congratulations? What did it feel like when you first had to make this move?
I think, you know, there's the initial shock of everything. You know, we did feel like we had some really good years in Atlanta, you know, with the team, with the city, just in the community. So, you know, like I had all my kids there, got three little kids, had them all there at the same hospital. You know, you kind of feel like you find a rhythm in the city.
Yeah.
So, you know, that part's hard, especially for your family. But from a professional standpoint, I mean, it's been awesome. You know, to come here and be on a veteran team, a team that, you know, with the players that we have, obviously, LeBron, all these guys, to come here and play with them and play for a championship, this is what you play for.
Sure.
So to have that opportunity right now. Once you get over the initial shock of like, man, we got to get out of our house and leave some friends and the team and all that, you know, I was really excited and it's been great. It really has been.
How has obviously the role changes a little bit. You've got to get to know a whole new set of teammates and system on the fly. How long did it take you to make that adjustment and what did it take?
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of takes time. I think if you ask anyone who gets traded in the middle of the season, you know, come in, you know, teams don't typically practice a ton during, you know, the middle of the season, the last part of the season, just because you're playing so many games. And we have guys that play so many minutes. So, you know, we don't have a ton of practice time. And you kind of need those things. I think what they were looking for, you know, in bringing me in was just to try to create something that's a little bit different than what they already had. You know, add someone who can create some movement, some energy. And, you know, but it takes five guys to kind of have that chemistry of, you know, running a real catch and shoot offense, guys learning to set the screen and then slip and just finding all the different things that are open. You know, it just takes time. And so, you know, there was a couple, you know, good games, I think, somewhat early, but I don't think anyone really felt comfortable with it for probably at least a month or so. I think right before All-Star break, we kind of felt like we've had a good groove. So that's like a month or so. But it just kind of takes time.
I think what everybody's finding extraordinary is the way the team played at the end of the season, and then the playoffs start. And there's the old saying, you can't just flip the switch. And yet everybody's looking at what you guys are doing, and it certainly seems like you're capable of that. What transpired? I mean, was it a conscious? Okay, now we're at the real part of the season. Help us understand, like, why the team was playing the way it was and how it's playing now.
Well, yeah, the switch has never been real for me in sports until I got to this team. It's always this thing that you kind of think you have it. You know, you hope there's a switch, but it's never really there. And
yeah,
all of a sudden, you know, it's a real thing with this team. But you know, I think if I'm going to really, you know, dig into our team and what's been going on, like, our offense has been amazing the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're scoring a ton of points.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the defensive end that we were atrocious. Mm-hmm. Right? We were terrible. And a lot of what our defense is when our defense is good is we got to have guys playing with really high energy, and we're trapping the ball, and we're getting in passing lanes, and we're, you know, creating steals and turnovers and getting out on the break. And you know, I think to do that, like I was saying, it just takes a lot of energy. And I think during the course of the season, especially when you got guys who have, you know, played so long into the summer, so many years in a row, we just didn't have that fire, you know, for that side of the court,
you know,
to be honest. And, you know, I think now you look at how our season's played out. I think, you know, LeBron played like 8 games in the last month. You know, like, he sat out a couple at the end. You know, we've had 2 sweeps here. I mean, he's super fresh and playing really hard. And, you know, he's in all those passing lanes. He's reading everything. He's communicating so well. And it just feels like a different team. We still have a long ways to go. But there's still things we can clean up and things we can get better at. And but I think we all feel pretty good about where we're at.
A lot of people don't know, and I've just discovered this, and I hope I'm not disclosing secrets here, but your wife Juliet is quite the accomplished singer. And there was a time where she was, you know, that she could have gone big time. She could have been the most famous person in the family. Is that fair to say?
yeah, I suppose, probably.
So what is it? Can she still break it out every now and then? My wife does not sing, so I'm just curious, like, what it's like to have somebody who has, if my wife listens to, you know, she's talented in many ways, but singing's not one of them. I wonder what it's like to have somebody who has that talent. Does she ever break it out?
Yeah, I mean, we've been married. We'll be married 6 years in August, and we got three babies. We got a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 6-month-old. So, you know, being pregnant, having young babies, not sleeping, all those things kind of, you know, they don't help the creativity of an artist.
No doubt. Know?
So it's something that I think someday she would definitely love. It's just, you know, if you're a singer, you're an artist, it's just who you are. It's in your wiring.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know what it looks like all the way going forward, but it's, mean, it's just part of who she is, and it'll definitely come out again some way. I really hope it does. But definitely, you know, someone you can just kind of walk around the house and hum or sing, or obviously the kids love it when she sings them at night and things.
No doubt.
It's a really fun thing to have in your house, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
When you marry someone, it's hopefully there's a lot of good reasons that you marry someone for, but you know, having someone who can sing, it just kind of adds a little something nice, you know, to what happens on a daily basis. It's just really fun.
For sure.
It's something in my family that we didn't really have. You know, we were all, you know, kind of more left brain, and you know, to bring an artist into the family and someone who can really sing like that and create, it's really fun for us, for me.
Well, you know, for all the left brain, there is a bit of the artist in you. And people may not know this. Your birthday is one day after mine, so I'm actually only one day older than you are. People probably are not aware of that, but and I kid. I'm curious because we've talked about shooting at various times and the craft of shooting, obviously, because that's a big part of what you're known for. I don't know that I've ever asked you this. When you look at when you came into the league and now, how much have you changed tweaked, or is it a matter of keeping your shooting stroke where you originally found it, or how much adjustment have you made over the years?
It's been, I mean, to me, it feels like a ton. You know, if someone were to look at my form, I think they would probably see a little difference. I don't know what you would see all the way.
Mm-hmm.
In my eyes and in how I feel like it's a completely different shot.
Hmm.
I feel like it adjusts every year. Like, there's always, I think, I'm always kind of tinkering. I'm always, you know, I think it's when it's your job, you keep on trying to do it better every day, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's always a little bit of tinkering, trying to think about it, you know, talking about it with other teammates or, you know, whatever it is. You're always just trying to get better. And, I mean, to me, I feel like injuries over the years have helped my shot. It's really weird to say that, but, you know, certain things in my knee or my elbow, I had to be more efficient. I had to be better. I had to be stronger. I had to be more perfect, otherwise there was pain, or otherwise there was, you know, like I couldn't do it how I wanted to.
Yeah.
And so I think over the years, dealing with those injuries, dealing with the rehab, you know, continuing to tinker every day, it feels like a completely different shot. So I don't know, but, you know, you always try to keep getting better and hopefully there's still more there.
So I discovered that one of your nicknames is Threesis. I wasn't aware of that. Who gave that to you?
That was an Atlanta thing. I feel like every city's kind of come up with their own little, you know, nickname, and it kind of, you know, sticks.
Threesis was...
That was what came up in it.
What was it?
That was an Atlanta thing.
What was it in Philly?
Philly, I was Sniper. That was when I wore and-one shoes for a couple years, and and-one was the thing, and AI started calling me Sniper.
And Utah?
I it was the and-one. It's so funny. Like, you come out, I was a second-round pick.
Yeah.
And I got, like, a Nike merchandise deal the first year. You know, you get a couple thousand dollars in merchandise, and then and-one was based out of Philly, so they offered me, like, $25,000. And I was like, what? You're going to offer me money? Yes. But have you seen me play? Are you sure? But I'm a fit for your brand. That was and-one. And then that was like, you know, a big thing back then. And I had Sniper for a while.
Nice. And then Utah? I saw Machine Gun, too.
Yeah, I think, I don't remember Utah. I think there's a few of them. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Utah was something. Chicago was hot sauce.
Hot sauce?
Stacey King would always yell, give me the hot sauce.
Hmm.
Whenever I'd make a three, and that, you know, that turned into a bit of a thing. But now he uses it for other guys. So I don't know. Like, it didn't stop when I left. He like just gave it to Marco Bellinelli and then to whoever else.
That's gotta be a little disappointing.
Yeah, I was a little bit hurt, but that's okay. So you know, every city there's something.
Do you have one in Cleveland?
I don't know if I have one right now. I'm sure. Well, Channy makes up a new one almost every day. Channy Fry.
Yes.
But so I don't know. But I haven't been here that long. Nicknames kind of take a while.
That's true.
Like, you kind of got to, you can't just like give someone a nickname on the first day you see someone. So.
That is true. That if it's a true nickname, if it's a genuine nickname and it's got some feel to it, that's for sure. Before I let you go, and I really appreciate you taking the time, you played with AI, as you mentioned. You played with Derek and Derek Rose in Chicago, and now you're playing with LeBron. Three pretty spectacular players and playmakers. I know this is probably a really difficult question, but I just wonder, when you compare and contrast playing with those three guys, how different or how alike is it to play for you in what you do to play with a talent like that?
Yeah, well, I mean, playing with those, I've always felt like the better the people are around me, the better I am. You know, the more, you know, if you want to just focus on me, I feel like you can probably take me away. You know, it's just, you know, for what my skill set is, what my role is on the team. You know, I feel like I'm someone who comes in and adds to like the superstar, someone who, you know, like I play off other people and I try to do that as well as I can.
Right.
So to have guys like that who you can just say, you know, the other team is just, you know, what do we do with this guy? How do we stop him? You know, to put my man in situations where do I help? Do I not help? You know, that's, and then I can come off screen and create energy and create movement. That's when I always feel like I'm at my best. So, you know, I mean, these guys, I mean, playing with Derek the year he was MVP, he was so special, you know, he still is, but like that year was unbelievable. Like he was a killer that year. And the way he attacked the basket and the pressure he put on the defense, obviously AI for, you know, several years. And then right now, LeBron, I think LeBron has a more well-rounded game than the other two guys. You know, like he sees everything and he feels everything on both ends of the floor. And he's such a good leader. And he cares so much about the team. Like he wants to play well personally, but all he really cares about is getting the team to play the best that they can and to win the game and to win a championship. And, I mean, he's like no one I've ever seen in sports, really. It's been really interesting to be on the inside now, watching him operate, not, you know, watching him on TV or playing against him, but to see the work that he puts into his craft and how much he cares and how he really leads this organization. It's been really, really amazing to watch.
I can't think of a better place to end, because that was sort of what I was curious about as far as the inside and the outside perspective on LeBron. You just gave it to us. Kyle, as always, really appreciate it. Wishing you the best of luck. I am sure I'm going to see you down the line during the playoffs. But in the meantime, stay safe, healthy. All the best to you and the family. And thanks again for taking the time.
You got it, buddy. Anytime.
All right.
Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Kyle. I know that I did. Remember, if you're listening from iTunes, subscribe to the show. You can also rate and leave a review. It's really important for us to hear what you have to say, whatever it may be, positive or negative. You can also check out our website, bjandbuecher.com. We got a lot of stuff over there, video, podcasts, written articles from people around the world. And as always, you can follow us on our Twitter page at bjandbuecher. BJ, as always, good time. Let's do it again next week.
See you next week.